as the forefather of Israel, took an extremely important in the history recorded in the Bible. From Abraham, then came the obedient generation, who is Isaac. And from Isaac to Jacob, that's the beginning of the 12 tribes, which is the tribe of Israel. Okay? So Abraham, who were called by God, demonstrate a generation of progressive faith. Progressive faith means that he is continuously improving. Also, yesterday we talked about he began in Ur, entered to Haran, but he was able to get out of Haran so that he was able to reach the final destination of Canaan. Okay? So this is a progressive journey of searching for a greater hope. A progressive journey of finding the destination that God prepared for us. It's a long journey. It's a long journey. And as we finished it yesterday, that not everyone who began the journey is able to finish accordingly. Okay? However, stop asking about others. Stop asking about who is going to finish the journey, because it's not important. It's none of your business. You only need to ask yourself, am I going to finish this journey of faith? Once there are some people who came to Jesus Christ, and they asked Jesus, Lord, are they few that will be saved? Are they few? Maybe some of you are asking the same question. Are there a lot of people that can go to heaven? Only very few. And you ask a question, how is it possible for TJC to be one and only church that will save people to heaven when there are so many denominations and there are billions of people who are not TJC member? You know, that's none of your business. You are not God. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about it. If God says so, it will be so. Whether you like it or not, whether you agree or not, whether it's fitting into your concept or not is irrelevant. Nobody, or it doesn't affect or impact anything. Okay? So, when people ask Jesus, are there few that will be saved? What did he answer? Jesus said, strive to enter through the narrow gate. What does it mean? It means pay attention to yourself. The question is wrong. The focus is wrong. Instead of asking, Lord, how many people will go into heaven? The question should be, Lord, can I go into heaven? That's more important. So don't waste your time contemplating or trying to judge God's way, God's method. Don't. It has nothing to do with you. If there are millions that will be saved, but you are not one of them, what's the point? But if they are only few, according to the teaching of the law, the road is narrow, the gate is small, and only few can find. Jesus made it very clear already, only few. And you still want to ask. But that's not fair. But that's inhumane. But like you are more gracious than God. Like you are more merciful than God. Like you are smarter than God. Okay? So when you are asking those questions, Jesus Christ wants you to redirect your focus. If they are only a few, but you are one of them, good enough. And if you're really so loving, you're so worried about the people of the world, the other billions of people, if you are really as loving as you try to portray, then when was the last time you preaching to others? Have you preached to your neighbor? Have you preached to a classmate? If you really care so much, love so much, you love their soul so much, why don't you never preach to them? Right? So, where did that all come from? Okay, but anyway. So yesterday we talked about Abraham, that he was able to thank God,
passing through Haran and able to enter into Canaan.
Okay, not everybody, but Apostle Paul said, I believe for him. He said he firmly believed the one that began the good work shall accomplish the good work. So if we never deviate, there will be obstacles, but if we never deviate, at the end, the Lord will surely complete the work that he began in our heart. As we said this morning, that if you are willing to repent and set up a determination, then you can begin the journey. And along the way, you will receive beauty, comfort, and love from the Lord. But don't stop there. You continue to go up to the top and see him face to face. But remember, seeing God face to face means what? A new way of living according to what? The commandments. Before that, there's no commandments. There's no. Once you see God face to face, if you want to see God face to face, that means what? A new way of living that you must abide. Like it or not, you must abide in order to really see him. Okay? So, this is what we left off yesterday as the journey of Abraham. He was pulled back by his father for years. Terah was unable to do so and detained the whole family to stay in Haran with him. But after he died, Abraham continued his journey. Okay? Now we want to talk about the second important key points or also a turning point in his life. Let's turn to Genesis chapter 12. The second thing that we want to learn from Abraham, Genesis chapter 12, verse 10. Verse 10, now there was a famine in the land, and Abraham went down to Egypt and dwelt there, for the famine was severe in the land. Verse 11, and it came to pass when he was close to enter in Egypt that he said to Sarah his wife, indeed I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me. But they will let you live. Please say you are my sister, that it might be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you. 14. So it was when Abraham came into Egypt that the Egyptians saw the woman, and she was very beautiful. That the prince of Pharaoh, the princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. In verse 17, but the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And Pharaoh called Abraham and said, what is this that you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way. So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Okay, so here is the second portion that we want to address about in the life of Abraham. In here, the first thing that we saw, that Abraham, after all the effort, he left Ur, and he also left Haran, and finally he reached Canaan, the beautiful land, the land of promise. However, at this time, the land of barbarian. So please do remember, at this time, the so-called Canaan is not the land flow with milk and honey. It's not. This is called the land of uncivilized, the land of barbarians, but it's the promised land. So when you look at present, like right now, you look at now, it might be very different than down the road what will happen at the end. Human beings, we are limited by time and space. You do not see what will happen later. Just like The land that Abraham was given was known as a barren land in the beginning, but ended as the land flowed with milk and honey. Okay? It began with as the land of barbarians, end up as a promised beautiful land with blessing for the Lord. So in the book of Deuteronomy, it says that the eyes of the Lord is always upon this land, that he will shower blessing, rain according to its season. So from the land of barbarian turning into the land of blessing. Why? Why? Because the Lord's eyes is on the land. So you know what, today, if we only make judgment according to what we see, very often what we see might turn into something that we never wish to see. For example, Lot, you all know about the story of Lot. You know, in chapter 13, let's just do a quick look. Huh? Let's turn to chapter 13. Chapter 13 in verse 10. That Lot lift his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well water everywhere, like the garden of God, like the land of Egypt, as you go to Zoar. Okay, so you know what, the land that Lot chose at that very moment, it was known as the beautiful well water land, like the garden of Eden. But if you go a few more chapters, what happened? After the Lord sent fire down from heaven, it says that it's like a burning furnace. But how do you know? You don't. You can't. Life is unpredictable. What you deem as the best solution or the best choice right now might turn out to be a disaster later on if the Lord is not there. So if you lift up your eyes and see on your own, you might be greatly disappointed at the end. Many years ago, when I decided to come out as a TTP student to serve as a full-time minister, at that time, as finance background, that's what I studied. So I studied finance. I involved in many tradings. I have my own stock, mutual fund, all the trading stuff. That's what I do. I mean, that's not what I do, but that's my after-work hobby, playing stock. Okay, so you know, I was involved in all those financial trading, and all those numbers, stock market up and downs. But after I decide to join TTP, I said to myself that I really don't want to be troubled by it. I don't want to. Not that I can't. You know what? Don't get me wrong. Playing stock is not a sin against God. It's not. As long as you're not playing as a gambling, you are playing as an investment. Hey, it's just a money tool. It's just a money tool. So it's not a sin to learn how to play stock. And you play rationally. You play responsibly. Hey, it's just a tool. However, I said to myself, nah, I don't really want to get myself involved into it, because the problem is I know how to do it. So, which means that I will be reading some reports, analysis. I will be like still paying some attention to the up and down fluctuation of the market, those kind of things, because I am able to, because I was trained to analyzing those data. So it came naturally to bother me in my mind. So at that time, US, the stock market is terrific. It's booming, it's going up, it's beautiful. All the numbers, all the diagrams looking beautiful. But I say to myself, nah, I can't. After self-assessment, after you do self-analysis, I realized that it's not good for me, that I know I might be somewhere down the road be enticed to go back and pay a lot of attention to it. And it will be a big setback in my servitude. So I say to myself, this is it. So you know what? In one day, I sold everything. I sold everything I own. I just went to the trading firm and say, relinquish everything, all my assets. Just sell everything and give me a check. And they were like, Why? Because you know that in those trading office, you have those big shrimp and everything is beautiful. And even the agent is like, you sure? You're selling everything? I was like, well, why not? They think that I was crazy. So I sold everything overnight. Even my friends who are playing stock with me, they call me and say, what's wrong? Are you out of your mind? Can you do those like 100-day line that you cannot see that the diagram is going up? I said, yeah. But you know what? There is more important investment that I need to do. Well, they don't know what I'm going to invest about, but they thought, oh, maybe like, you know, into the oil market, you know, crude oil and stuff like that. I said, no, there's a greater investment that I need to do. So, you know, I sold everything. It's a very dumb decision according to all the analysis at that time. And I knew it. It's not that I can't read those diagrams. I knew it was a very, very lousy decision, financially speaking. But I sold everything. Anyway, I feel very light. Honestly speaking, the moment I sold everything and got my check back, I feel very, very light. And life is easy. I don't have to worry about any of those anymore. And I don't think about how much I could have win. I mean, I could have earned. I don't think about those. You know, you think about those, you feel that you're losing something. You don't think about that. Hey, you walk away. You walk away without any burden. Little do I know, 10 days, about 2 weeks later, the whole stock market collapsed. I don't know, but maybe for you it's something far and away. But there was a period of time that the whole U.S. stock market collapsed and crashed from 14,700, cut it to half, under 7,000 index. And that's very scary for Dow Jones to be cut off. That means that if you have any money in there, you most likely you end up with less than half. Just in a few weeks, cut it to half. And my friend called me angry and say, why don't you told us it's time to get out of the market? Because apparently among all my friends, I was the only one that was able to get out of it safely. They all lost tons of money. But the problem is, even until today, it has been, 10 years already. Even until today, in these 10 years, all those economists, all those financial analysts, they cannot tell you, even until today, after 10 years, they don't know why the market collapsed. There's no reason. But this is life. Life is unpredictable. When you say, peace, peace, very good, everything is fine, you don't know what will happen next. Life is never predictable. Never control in your hand. So, since life is so unpredictable, like the beautiful land, like the land of Garden of Eden, could turn into a burning furnace. But if God is guiding your way, the barren land can turn into a land floating with milk and honey, isn't it? So the problem is never about your choice. The problem is always about if God is there abiding with you. Simply like that. If God is there for you, even the worst thing can turn into the land filled with milk and honey. If God is not there, your so-called best choice, the best analysis, can turn into a disaster in the long run. Please do remember that. Career the same. Brothers and sisters, very soon you go into college, you dream for a beautiful career. You want to land on the best choice. So you strive, you work hard, you want to get the best GPA, you want to go to super expensive college so that when you graduate, you are in debt for $500,000. Isn't it? That's life. And you thought that's the best choice. You thought that's the best direction to go. But let me tell you one thing. As hard as you study, which you should, as diligent as you be a responsible student, that you should. Please do remember one thing. Time and chance is always in God's hand. You try your best in school. At the same time, you rely on the help of the Lord. And whatever the pathway that has been paved
in front of you. Just be courageous and take the path and go on. If the path allow you to continue, be strong in your faith, that's a good path. Even though it might not be a good path, seeing by the view of the society. Even it might be a bad choice in the eyes of the society. But you made that choice because it's good for your faith. Let me tell you one thing. You keep God in your heart, God will keep you in His eyes. And then everywhere you go in your journey, when you graduate, when no one else can find a job, the Lord will lend you on a job. When everyone struggles just to survive in the society, the Lord will open the way for you and make it easy for you. When I say easy, I don't mean always a smooth ride. What I mean easy is when there are trouble, God is there to be with you in your trouble. And then you will find out that the Lord is leading you to the higher ground. Though that might through some obstacles or tribulations, but you look back, you find that every step of the way, the Lord is there with you if you put Him first in your heart. Then the barren land can turn into the land flow with milk and honey. But in here, right from the beginning of chapter 4, in chapter 12, right from the beginning of verse 10, it says that this land there was a famine in the land. So please do remember one thing, that even Abraham in the land of promise, there were famine there. Okay? We never deny the fact that even as a believer of TJC, even on the journey to heaven, we never deny the possibility of obstacles, troubles, tribulations, difficulties. We never deny that. In fact, we mention over and over is there. Even Jesus Christ tell you that in this world you shall have trouble, tribulations, but in me you shall have peace. So as a Christian, we never deny the fact that there are tribulations. In fact, if anyone trying to convincing you that after you believe Jesus, everything will be beautiful, be fine, blessings shower down upon you, everything will be good, you will be happily ever after, he is a liar. He is trying to use those flattering sweet words to convince you otherwise. Because Jesus Christ never say that. Jesus Christ say what? Tribulations. Paul say what? Tribulations. Peter say what? Tribulations. All the apostles tell you tribulation is there, but no worry, for the God-fearing person, God is there as well. And through tribulation, it only makes you stronger. Isn't it so? Look what happened to Job. After all those tribulations, Job only say what? He say, after all this, I shall be refined as pure gold. Be refined. So for Job, suffering is only a process, a refinery process to make him stronger. Just like the life of Abraham. You will find that Abraham's life is not like always perfect. There are a lot of up and downs. There are times that he encountered tribulation, and there are times that he failed in this journey. So number one, please do remember that in this journey, there are difficulties. However, difficulties is not desperation. For those who do not have God, tribulation is only a sign of bad luck. Like for those who doesn't have God, for those who do not believe in God, when they run into tribulation, it's only what? Desperation. Disappointment, desperation, and dead end. Daomei, like bad luck. But for you, a person with the abundance of God, for us, tribulation is only a lesson, a training, a discipline to make me stronger and better. So do not suffer in vain. If you do not have God in your life, suffering is merely suffering. But when you have God in your life, suffering becomes a training ground with the intention, with a purpose to make you stronger. But then we have to ask ourselves, why tribulation happened? Why tribulation happened? According to our understanding, there are three reasons why a person encounters difficulties in life. Three reasons. Number one, you are punished by God.
Okay? So we found that if you are having a lot, if you are running into a great obstacle, a great tribulation in life, number one, first possibility, maybe you do something wrong, and the Lord's trying to remind you. He disciplined you out of good intention. According to Book of Hebrew, he says that, is there a loved child never been chastised? Unless it's an illegitimate child, then of course, go free, do whatever you want. But if a child is loved, then the child will be disciplined. Okay? So there will not be a loved child to go without any chastise. Okay? So number one, God loves you. And because he loves you, when you did something wrong, he reminded you by giving you a punishment so that you can go back to the right path. And in the long run, it's beneficial for you. Okay? So like when you are younger, when you are doing something dangerous, you are playing with the fire. What would your parents do if they really love you? Benny, have you ever played with fire? Why are you looking at your sister? Oh, you don't remember. Okay. Any of you that used to or even until now still like to play with fire? Sam? Sam, you are like what? 20? 21. You know that when you play with fire at home, what happened? When you like playing with matches, like trying to light up the curtain. So what happened to your parents? Do they encourage you? Tim, do they encourage you? Go! This is fun! Let's burn down the house! They will like just smack you on the face, right? You know what? Discipline. Discipline comes with good intention. Your parents try to tell you that this is dangerous. Don't do it. It's dangerous. It could harm you. It could harm people. So they stop you not because they do not love you. You don't find, really, a parent who loves their children, encourage them to go ahead, have fun, burn down the house. No. They will stop you, take the matches away from you, and they will tell you how dangerous it is. Of course, they will smack you on the head first, right, Paul? Okay, so you know what? Number one, why tribulation happened? Number one is because you did something wrong, and God is trying to bring you back to the right path. Out of love. Okay, that's number one, punishment. Number two, training. Training. Maybe you didn't do anything wrong, but it's for the glory of God. God has a greater intention, a greater mission bestowed in your life, and he knows that you need to go through training in order to be able to fit into the greater mission that you have in life. Just like in Gospel John chapter 17. He talked about for the branches that bear fruits, the master will prune, will cut to make sure that it bear more fruits. Okay? So the second possibility why there are obstacles in life is because the Lord has a greater expectation. So after the training process, after refining through high temperature, fire, it makes you better and stronger. You find that in all the great saints in the Bible, everybody, Abraham, Moses, Daniel, Isaiah, everybody, Jeremiah, Nehemiah, everyone that was greatly used by God, they all have a training period. And that training period enables them to be strong enough to take up the challenge that the Lord prepared for them in their life. And by accomplishing the trial, that they were able to demonstrate as a shining bright star in the kingdom of God for the greater purpose. So you know what? For gold, the higher temperature in the refinery, the purer the gold becomes. So you have 14K, 18K, 24K. Okay? And different level of purity create a huge differences in value. For example, diamonds. Diamond and coal, they are the same thing, but their value is drastically different. Why? Pressure. Pressure. After great pressure pressed upon it, it turned into diamond. And then the value becomes very different. So, second possibility why you are in trouble, why you have a lot of obstacles in life, is because God has greater purpose for you in your life. And He's preparing you for it. Look at the life of Joseph. Terrible life. Obstacles, being sold by his brother, become a slave, and then turn and being thrown into the jail. What? It's all preparing him to become the prime minister in Egypt. And to for what? To save the family of Israel. A greater purpose. Number three. So number one is a punishment. Number two is a training for a better you. Number three is you deserved it. When I say you deserve it, or what shall I say? You caused it. You are responsible for it. This one, God might not be involved. So do not attribute everything to either God or Satan. It's wrong. You know what? Sometimes when we say, oh, this is the will of God, or we say, this is the work of Satan, sometimes we are dodging personal responsibilities. We use it as a shield to avoid responsibility. Okay? When something happens, you say, oh, this is the will of God. When something happens, you say, oh, no, this is the work of Satan. So at the end of the day, that I'm not responsible for anything because it's not me. No, it's you. Sometimes it's you. There was a sister who always fight, always have a short temper, always saying things, nasty things against people. And she always say, oh, this is the work of Satan. Satan made me do it. Satan made me do it. Satan made me yell at people. Satan made me say the bad words. It's all Satan's fault. So she doesn't need to do anything because it's not her fault. It's Satan's fault. There was once in the church. Again, she lost her temper. She was yelling at another sister. She was fighting with another sister and yelling at her using bad words. And then she said, oh, Satan made me do it. It's like, you know, she knew it's wrong. And people say, why did you do that? She said, oh, Satan made me do it. At that very moment, Satan appeared in the church. Satan appeared and using his fist to hammer her on the forehead. Pang! And say, it's not me this time. I didn't do it this time. So what does it mean? It means that she is the one. But she loved to blame it on Satan. So what? So she's not responsible. She didn't need to do anything about it. Be careful. Sometimes will of God, Satan's work, can become purely as an excuse for ourselves to dodge our responsibility. Do not allow that to happen. Okay? So number three, what's the possibility? Why is there an obstacle, or why are you in trouble? Number three is because you ask for it. You ask for it. Just like you eat without washing your hand and then you have a stomach ache. Can you say, oh, this is the will of God? Oh, Satan is attacking me. Right? Can you just go and wash your hand? Right? You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we do things on our own. Then we are responsible for the consequence of it. You don't study. You fail your test. Can you say, this is the trial of God to make me better? No, you just didn't study. Or Satan is attacking me so I cannot glorify my God in this among my classmates. No, you did it. So please remember, there is one possibility that you are in trouble because you caused the trouble. You are the troublemaker. You caused the trouble for yourself. Then you shall change instead of contributed to work of God or attack of Satan. Okay? So be careful. There are three possibilities. So in here we see that Abraham, he was in the promised land, but then the land has famine. Yes, There might be obstacles in life, but what are you going to do about it? For Abraham, his decision is very simple. What did he do? He went down to Egypt. Egypt is always a sign of the world, temptation of the world in the Bible. So he decided to go down to Egypt. Why? Because this is the easy way to solve the problem. The easiest way is to leave the problem's land and go down to Egypt. Problem solved. But there are consequences follow with your decision. Please do remember, every decision that you made, you have to pay the consequence for it. There are always a consequence. They might be good, they might be bad. Depends on your decision. But you are the one that need to deal with the consequence. So, you know what, for him, he got trouble. The easiest way is what? Go to Egypt. A lot of times in our life, we also prefer the easy way out. Right? We prefer the easy way so that we can avoid confrontation. We can avoid pressure. As we said earlier, when you are in school eating among your friends, are you going to say grace? That's like so small obstacles. But even some of us are dodging it. Some student told me very briefly, I don't say grace among my friends because it's embarrassing. So like that. They said, oh, we just don't do it. Some say, you know, we do it very quickly. As I was grabbing my plate, bow ahead and up, and I say my grace. You know what? There are many decisions that you could make when you are encounter obstacles. You could always pick the easy way out. But please do remember, easy way out always return with a severe consequence. When you are trying to avoid standing firm for your faith, they always backfire on you later on. Like for some students, they go to college, they live in the dormitory. Should you pray? Will you be able to pray in front of a stranger, in front of your roommate? Like, you know what? Those decisions need to be made. And sometimes if we are dodging, the more you dodge from the problem, the weaker you become in your faith. So I still remember when I first got into college, my roommate, a Hungarian-American, 250 pounds, huge guy. And this is the first time we met. So after we set up everything, after we settled down, after we put our beddings and we put all our luggage, I told him that I need to talk to you. So we sit down. I mean, he's a friendly guy. He was a friendly guy. So we sit down, we talk, and then we introduce ourselves. And then I told him that I need to talk to you about my faith. And he was like, okay. You know, what kind of weird faith that you have? I said, I'm a Christian. And he's like, oh, fully relieved. I'm a Christian too. Yeah. But I told him that the church I attend is a bit different. And there is something that I need to tell you, that the way we pray. And then I was flipping to the Bible and stuff. I was like, you know what? And then he told me that, oh, sure, no problem. I fully respect your faith. Hey, I told you already, okay? So I did my part. And then he said, no problem. I'm very accepting. And in my heart, I said, we'll see about that tonight. So though, you know that as he was about like 10-ish, 10:30, that he was watching TV, he watched South Park every night before he go to sleep. So as he was watching TV, and 10:30 at that time in New York, every night, 10:30 to 11, we all kneel down to pray. Doesn't matter where we are. So 10:30, we kneel down to pray. I kneel down to pray. I can hear him, boom. Like, he was like just on his bed, right? I can hear the pounding sound when he like went against the wall, like in shock or something. That's his problem. I told him upfront. I prepared him for it. So not my problem. I did my prayer. Like that, yeah, in shock. So, you know, after I pray, and I look at him, I can see that he's a little bit uncomfortable, but he's like smiling at me. Good, okay. And then after that, every night, around like 10:25, he knew that I prayed from 10:30 to 11. So from 10:25, he'll be like, I need to grab something from 7-Eleven. You need anything? So every night, from 10:30 to 11, he's like lingering outside, grabbing like a hot dog or a Slurpee, like eating and drinking outside, even in the snowy day. You know, sometimes it's snow heavy outside, like winter, snow heavy. And he's like 10:25, he's like, I'm going to 7-Eleven, you need anything? I was like, in this weather? He's like, I need hot dog. But you know what? I made it clear upfront already. So I'm very comfortable. The more you hide in the beginning, the more you have to retrieve along the way. Let me tell you. But but when you just open it up, sit it down as how it is, be confident and be brave in the beginning, it just gets easier and easier. That's what happened. That's what happened. Huh? So you know what? Abraham picked the easy way. The easiest way is Egypt. Egypt. So he went to Egypt. He went down to Egypt. He solved the problem immediately, but at a much higher cost. Compared to his son, Isaac. When Isaac also encountered famine, and then immediately Isaac said, let's go down to Egypt. And God stopped him. God told him, no, you stay here. And Isaac decided to stay in the land of famine. And the Bible says that that's the time that he became super wealthy. He received hundredfold of harvest. How come in the famine time? So you know what I'm saying? That famine time could turn into the most blissful moment if you allow God to be in control. If you refuse to take the easy way to touch, if you refuse to touch responsibilities, that even in the day of famine, the Lord can turn into the greatest day of blessing. Even in time of crisis, emergency, God can turn that into a great opportunity for your future advancement. If you allow God to be in control. So do not run, do not hide, do not be afraid. Shortcut sometimes turn into the longest wait. That's all. Bow head and pray in silence.